From the KTOO newsroom, I'm Rasha McChesney with this local and statewide news update. In the U.S. Senate on Thursday, two competing bills that would have ended the partial government shutdown failed to get enough votes to advance. Alaska's senators reacted to them differently. Senator Lisa Murkowski says there are aspects of each bill she doesn't like, but she voted for both of them.
I'm trying to figure out a way to get the government open.
First, she voted for a Republican bill that included money for the border wall President Trump has been promising. When that failed to get the necessary 60 votes, Murkowski was one of six Republicans who joined Democrats on a bill to fund the closed department for 2 weeks while negotiations continue.
I understand the president's priorities, but don't confuse it with the priority that we have to ensure that those men and women who are protecting us, who are working for us, have a right to get paid.
Murkowski says she's hearing from proud Coast Guard spouses who are going to food banks because they don't know when they'll get paid again.
What kind of a message is that? That you don't matter? That we expect you to work, but we're not going to pay you? I'm sorry. I'm going off on a little bit of a rant here.
Senator Dan Sullivan voted for the Republican bill, but against the Democratic measure. He says the president would have vetoed a bill that did not include wall funding, and that would have only continued the gridlock. Right after the votes, Murkowski led a bipartisan call from the Senate floor for a temporary measure to reopen government. At the same time, a small knot of protesters gathered outside the senator's offices in Juneau.
And the shutdown! And the shutdown! And the shutdown! And the shutdown!
They carried protest signs and also a giant chicken balloon with a swoop of orange hair to lampoon the president. And the partial government shutdown is affecting rural federal court proceedings in Alaska. Nationwide, the federal court system will run out of money Thursday, January 31st, on the shutdown's 39th day. But some court cases have already been postponed or suspended. KTOO's Matt Miller has more.
U.S. courts say they have enough money saved up to continue operating for a few more days, but after January 31st, those funds will run out and employees will be working without pay. The chief deputy clerk for a U.S. District Court in Alaska, Stephanie Lawley, says most Alaskans may not notice anything.
Throughout the District of Alaska, court operations will continue on a daily basis as they traditionally do. You would not be seeing any change in court operations. We will remain open for business as usual.
Perhaps with one big exception, U.S. District Court Chief Judge Timothy Burgess, the top federal judge in Alaska, has ordered suspension of civil cases in which the federal government is a party. Hearings in a few criminal cases were canceled earlier this month and then rescheduled as U.S. courts recently extended available funding to January 31st. Federal public defenders are a lot like their counterparts in the state court system. They are assigned to represent clients who cannot afford to pay for their own attorney. But federal defenders' salaries are paid by U.S. courts, at least until the end of the month anyway. Assistant federal defender Daryl Gardner says they'll be billed for portions of their health insurance if the shutdown drags on past 2 months.
So if we want, for instance, dental insurance to continue, we'll have to pay that out of our own pockets, as opposed to having, obviously, being deducted from our pay because we won't be getting paid. So.
Gardner is based in Anchorage, but he frequently helps clients around the state.
We're government workers. We are, you know, not in private practice. We're dedicated to the administration of justice more than necessarily, you know, making a bunch of money in private practice.
Gardner says about a dozen people work out of his office in Anchorage. He says a co-worker has two children to support and just bought a house. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Matt Miller.
And a member of the Dunleavy administration has been accused of lying to the state legislature during a recent confirmation hearing. John Quick was named as the state's new commissioner of the Department of Administration in late November. Quick claims on his resume he was an owner and investor in a number of businesses in Washington state. However, the owner of one of those businesses, Anthem Coffee and Tea, disputes that. Janie Reynolds of Puyallup, Washington, sent a letter to several lawmakers this week saying that he lied during his confirmation testimony to the Senate Finance Committee. In the letter, she says that Quick was hired in 2011 to organize the family-owned business, but that he was fired in 2012 and never had any percentage of ownership in the company. Reynolds also says Quick lied about helping to recruit and secure investors for the company. Senate Democrats weighed in on the revelations on Thursday. Anchorage Senator Tom Begich says that Quick is stepping into one of the highest possible positions in the state.
All of us who at one time or another have been at-will employees should be held to the highest standards. If we can't meet that standard, then it leaves in doubt the words that they say in committee, the words that they say to the public.
There are other factual errors on Quick's resume and other online biographies. Quick claims that he attended Wayland Baptist University in Texas for 2 years and received an MBA. The school's registrar says he attended for about 9 months and did not graduate. Begich says Dunleavy should follow up with Quick.
I would suggest that the governor should take a look at this application and actually ask point blank his commissioner appointee whether he intended to provide him false information.
Quick has worked for other politicians in the state. Before he joined the Dunleavy administration, he was the chief of staff to Kenai Peninsula Borough Mayor Charlie Pierce. He's also the registered owner of a consulting business that provided campaign assistance to Soldotna Republican Senator Peter Michicki. Quick did not return a request for comment. Governor Dunleavy's press secretary, Matt Shuckrow, says Quick is aware of the allegations and is working on a response. That department that Quick has been tasked with running oversees administrative services for state agencies on everything from personnel to mail distribution. It had more than $343 million in a budget last year. And concerns over a hostile workplace culture surfaced Tuesday night during a presentation to the Sitka Assembly calling for higher police wages. Sitka Police Chief Jeff Ankerfeldt said that high turnover in his department was more than a matter of pay. KCAW's Catherine Rose reports.
Sitka Police Chief Jeff Ankerfeldt says the police department has a major retention problem. And when the Sitka Assembly met on Tuesday night, he asked Assembly members to consider a $5 an hour increase for police officers. He says keeping the department staffed isn't a new problem.
The way we have been doing it has been very wasteful. That this attrition, this turnover that's been occurring historically pretty consistently for almost a decade has cost us money. It's cost us roughly $2.4 million in overtime just for short shifts. Just short shifts. People, not enough people to work. Since 2010, 32 police officers have been hired and then quit the police department.
Right now, Ankerfeldt says the department is staffed at 12 when they have the capacity to hire 16. Two of those 12 are on administrative leave, and 2 to 3 more officers are likely to leave Sitka before the end of the year, including Ankerfeldt himself.
This will leave Sitka with a total of 5 to 6 officers, or less than one-third the minimum of officers needed to provide service, competent service to our community.
Ankerfeldt doesn't attribute all of this turnover to low pay. He says poor facilities and workplace culture have contributed as well.
Historically, the Sitka Police Department has been a depressing place to work. When I first started there, I thought that the environment was completely toxic. It was Lord of the Flies. And that challenge persists today.
And competing jobs that pay better. Ankerfeldt and City Administrator Keith Brady noted that 2 of the officers leaving were doing so for jobs with the state troopers that offered better pay. Here's Brady.
We understand that compensation like this is not a silver bullet to the issues that we have with the PD, but it's something that we can do that will help with at least recruitment and potentially retention for the long term. When the troopers did increase their pay, their academies are full right now.
After hearing Ankerfeldt's proposal, the Assembly opened the floor to public comment. Officers Ryan Silva and Mary Ferguson spoke together. Both officers have filed separate whistleblower suits against the city for harassment and discrimination, and a jury trial for Silva's case is set for September of this year. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Catherine Rose.
$68.6 million. That's how much the U.S. Air Force and Missile Defense Agency plan to spend on modernizing the Cobra Dane radar site on the Aleutian island of Shemya over the next 5 years. The Government Accountability Office released a report in December saying the 43-year-old site, quote, faces growing sustainment challenges, end quote. But the Department of Defense will resolve them by replacing and redesigning parts. The military uses the Cobra Dane to track objects in space, like satellites and debris, and defend against incoming missiles and gather intelligence. Because of its far west location on Shemya, Air Force officials say the radar is capable of tracking North Korean missile threats sooner than any other stations in Alaska. While the military expects to operate Cobra Dane at least through 2030, the DoD is also investing in new ground-based radars in the Marshall Islands. That's the latest from the KTOO newsroom. I'm Rasha McChesney.